Collaborative businesses are on the rise, and this is the Collaborative Business Podcast, a podcast that will help you find answers and provides useful insights to the best ways of working together in partnerships, alliances, and many other kind of business-to-business collaboration. Here's your host, Peter Simoons.
Hello, and welcome to episode 4 of the Collaborative Business Podcast. This episode, I'm talking to John Bell. And the first time I met John must have been around 2001, when John was working on developing the Alliance methodology and the Alliance office for Philips. As long as I have known John, he has been at Philips in the field of alliances, and next to that, he has been a part-time professor in strategic alliances. So I'm very happy to have John as a specialist guest in my podcast. Nowadays, John Bell is responsible for strategy, business development and open innovation in Philips Research. And you will hear John explain the broad field of alliances and how Philips approaches them, why alliances are important, and some advice from John on how to approach them. This was actually the first episode recorded where my guest and I were together in one room. That might give a different dynamic to the conversation than the regular Skype interviews I do. Let me hear your feedback in the comments under the show notes at www.simoons.com/episode4. And also do let me know if you have any suggestions for guests or questions you would like me to ask to future guests. Now, without further ado, let's dive into the conversation with John Bell. John, welcome to the conversation.
Thank you.
Before we move into really the topic of today, I would like to ask you to give a little introduction to the listener who you are, because we know each other already for a long time, but most of the listeners will not know you, I guess.
Exactly. So that's good. I'm John Bell. I'm since about 12 years within Philips, especially responsible for alliances. And these days I'm responsible for strategy and business development and also open innovation within Philips Research. Philips, as you may know, and you know, Peter, is a large company, large multinational, focusing on healthcare, consumer lifestyle, and lighting. And alliances are a big part of what we do. On top of that, I'm a part-time professor on strategic alliances for 10 years in Nijmegen, University of Nijmegen. And since this year, I moved to the University of Tilburg, focusing on alliances, alliance strategy, and innovation.
Okay, thank you for the introduction. Now, focusing on alliance and alliance strategy, you said, what is for you an alliance?
An alliance is for me, and that's always an interesting question. I like to see it as a broad definition. So typically, I would say everything in between acquisition and do-it-yourself. But it's always dangerous because then everything is part of it. But the reason I do that is because most of the times you need a certain mindset. You need similar steps. You need similar ways of working, whether it's, say, a real strategic alliance or a more tactical alliance. Things like win-win, give and take, contribute something and get part of the control. Those kind of elements are crucial almost in all corporations and in all alliances. So therefore, I typically take a little bit broader definition. But if I really go into what we call strategic alliances, then we upgrade also the attention in our company for these corporations. We typically put a dedicated person on top, a dedicated alliance manager, full-time, one of the best people, not just somebody who we still have who doesn't have a job temporarily. And we also want to put some high-level executive sponsorship on a strategic alliance, because strategic alliances for me, but also for our company, are long-term focused, intended to stay forever, which is typically not what happens in practice, but we tend to start for longer term, have impact for our strategy, for our competitive position, for the market entry we do, for instance, or to create new businesses. long answer. Sorry for that. But
no, that's okay. What you describe is basically what I also described in the second episode of the podcast as being the collaborative business spectrum, as I called it. Everything in between a transaction and M&A is collaborative.
Yeah,
whereas
I recognize
we see
that. Yeah.
Several stages and strategic alliances are one of them. So it's good that you mentioned that you assign alliance managers, dedicated alliance managers, and executive sponsors to them, because those are also recognized as being highly important in alliances. Now, the fact that you do that, how important is an alliance for your company?
Yeah, that's depends on who you talk to, I would say, because the problem, and also with the definition you use and I use, is that if you include everything also just a little bit further than a transaction, you end up with hundreds or maybe even thousands of relationships or alliances in this sense every year for a company like us. And we are about 25 billion company, which is... yeah, you easily get all kind of people in procurement, in R&D, in sometimes even marketing and sales and distribution who say, hey, I'm also doing an alliance. So alliances are then in that sense embraced by many people. And for us as a company, alliances are very important. But the challenge will be to find all those people to help them to become much better in their alliances. So what we typically do is we focus first on the most important strategic ones and then put dedicated people on. Those strategic ones are for us very important, and they also bring revenue, they bring profit, they also bring new opportunities to get exposed to markets or products or services we typically don't get exposed to ourselves. So for instance, we have now recently set up an alliance with Disney on creating lights, lamps, Disney lamps, but also light atmosphere, light experiences, where people start to read a book, for instance, on a tablet, and then also get the light scene created, which fits perfectly with that story, the Disney story, of course. So that creates an atmosphere which we cannot do on our own, because Disney also has their own, say, content or their perspective to bring in, and by teaming up we are able to really move into new applications and new products and new services. So for us as a company, alliances are important, and we know also how difficult it is to be successful in alliance, and we also want to be ready to feel comfortable in dealing in a world where alliances are omnipresent. In many cases, you see alliances being around you with suppliers, with customers, with retailers, with doctors, with hospitals. And we must learn to feel comfortable in doing so. So it's quite important for us.
And you mentioned you are in Philips for 12 years with alliances. And when you talk about we must learn, is it a continuous learning process for Philips?
Yeah, also for myself, even after all those years in alliances, I still learn almost every day. But also for Philips, it's a continuous learning. And yeah, I'm not sure how people look at it, but once you're in a big company, it's difficult as a company to learn. So it's relatively easy as an individual to learn to some extent. Once you get older, it's sometimes more difficult, but to learn as a company is much more difficult. So you have to install things to make sure that the organization, the people around you, are also learning. So for us as a company, we have seen that we need to learn. And that's why we also decided at one point in time to put a small alliance team in place, centrally, closely reporting to the head of Philips, the head of strategy reporting to the head of Philips, the CEO, to make sure that we could not only learn as individuals being active in alliances, but also collectively learning as an organization.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not always easy, because people go, people come, you have new kids on the block, you have people who are in different phases of their career, willing to learn or not willing to learn. Some people never learn it, how to do alliances, and still are sometimes are involved in working together. So and therefore, I think what has been important to us is to bring that learning to a much broader audience than only ourselves. How did we do that? So when starting with a small alliances team, we selected some good people with some professional background in alliances, a credible background, and we created also our language. One language which we say, hey, this is the way we do typically alliances in Philips. And that language is a very simple approach where everybody now understands, okay, now we are in this phase, now we're in that phase, and now in this phase. And we also created some tools around it to make sure that we could try to write down or make explicit the knowledge which some people had in their minds, in their heads, in their brains, in their fingers, because they have been doing it. So making that information explicit in those tools helps a lot, because that's a way to broadcast the message and to have people learn and play with those tools. And by playing and by using, they learn themselves. On top of that, we also brought communities together, people working on alliances, interested in alliances. Every 3 months we had, especially the first years of this alliance office, sometimes 60, 70 people in the room or virtually in the room to exchange practices, worst practices, good practices, sometimes even best practices, people talking about what they experienced with their alliance. And then we as alliance team also looked at that, say, we've picked up this and this and this, and together we can bring this forward. And then we codified the information, not only in the tools, but also in making cases available for the Philips people. So that is a continuous process. And we also challenge ourselves to get to a level where we say, hey, we want to be world-class. And my view is that we never really become world-class, but are always on our way to get closer and closer to world-class.
Because the world is also moving on.
Exactly, and also because I feel personally that, yeah, once you state that you're world-class, probably the decay starts. So it's also important to stay open about other views and learn from that, and not become complacent and say, ah, we are world class. We cannot learn anything anymore. So it's a continuous learning.
Is there among the learning, are there elements where you learn the most? Type of experiences that you see that the company learned the most, the people learned the most?
Yeah, I think we have some examples where talking about concrete situations, concrete cases, both good ones and less good ones, that we learned a lot collectively. So mm-hmm. In those sessions, as I mentioned, when we brought the community together, when an alliance manager was standing on stage and saying, hey, I tried this, I tried that, it didn't work out, and I don't know why. And then the other people could respond and say, hey, yeah, but I had the same experience. A little bit different, and I tried to do it like that, and then it worked. And sometimes it had to do with how to influence or to say to get alignment and agreement internally in Philips, and sometimes it was dealing with a partner. And those concrete cases, I think we learned most from it.
Yeah.
And the other thing we did as well is to more or less get institutionalized that we would also do a post-mortem. Post-mortem typically you do when a project stops or fails. We also did post-mortems, maybe it's the wrong terminology, when an alliance was still ongoing. So we looked at, on a regular basis, how is it going compared to the objectives? Can we learn from that what went right, what went wrong? And we also did post-mortems alliances that we stopped, alliances that we sometimes also decided not to move on and to stop during the process because changes in the strategic direction or misfits with other objectives. And looking really closely to what happened in that situation, analyzing that, looking together with the stakeholders, that also brought a lot of learnings.
And you embed those learnings again back into the organization, into the methodology.
Exactly, into the methodology, into the tools, adapt the tools, create new tools, create cases, and small descriptions, not lengthy books, but small descriptions of a case, of a postmortem, which is then shared freely within Philips. Something else we also started to do at one point in time, because when we learned over time that we had a certain language on how to do alliances, and we also came across potential partners which were less experienced than Philips in setting up alliances. And what we typically then did, because we as alliance office, being centrally in Philips, are able and were able and we're also doing, is we said, okay, we want to facilitate this potential alliance with this partner which has less experience. So instead of being then the very experienced partner and try to get most out of it, we decided to do it a little bit different. And we went to this potential partner and said, hey, we can share and we want to share everything we do around alliances, in the sense of this is our language, this is a methodology, and we will help you to understand how we do that. Just for free, you can have it. And why? Because in that sense, we believe that if they are better prepared and understand the language and understand also how to set up an alliance, they are much better able to come up with the best perspective for that alliance. And we too. So the win-win is in that sense increasing.
So you start your win-win by sharing, which you should do in an alliance, but you actually are sharing already your knowledge about creating alliances before you actually create one.
Exactly. To help them to understand how we think about alliances, why we do certain things based on best practices. And that helped a lot, I would say, in a couple of situations where the partner was less experienced and sometimes a little bit nervous also, because they sensed that Philips was more experienced.
Yeah.
And what will happen then in that relationship?
Do you have a specific part in the methodology on how to select a partner?
Yes, if you take a look at the steps we take, we typically think about a few steps. One is about strategy. What is our strategy, and should we do an alliance? Yes, no. Yeah. That question you can easily answer, at least if you think about it carefully, what your objectives are, then you can probably come quickly to an answer. Although I must admit that the answer is not always straightforward.
No.
So sometimes you can achieve the same objectives with an acquisition or with an alliance or do it yourself. Depends a little bit on how many competencies you have, which competencies, how much time, how much money, etc. And then we think about next phase is preparation. So what should you do in the preparation? Suppose you know what your objectives are, that you need an alliance, and you can think about what kind of ideal partner would we love to have? What are the things you want to give in or not give in at all during the negotiation? And then the third phase is partner selection, where we typically look at a couple of things: strategic fit, operational fit, brand fit. Sometimes we look at network fit. And do they have a network of players around them which complements our network, or is it fully overlapping? If it's fully overlapping, it may not be so interesting to work together. So we have a number of fits as we define them and try to score partners on those fits. Where we typically do two things. One is much more broadly look objectively at different partners, at objective information. For instance, publicly available information like revenues and profitability, etc., market position and those kind of things. And then we look in the second phase, once we went from the long list to a short list, we also do much more subjective evaluation of potential partners. And then we typically sit together with a few people, management team, for instance, of a business unit, with the different disciplines around the table to try to answer questions around the short list and come then with the preferred list. And that's something we have created very nice tools, simple tools for Excel based, and that works pretty well.
So you don't do the I met at a conference type of partner selection.
It happens, course, and it happens, and it's good that it happens. So, but it should not be the only thing that happens. And what typically we do as an alliance team as well, if this happens, that people meet each other, sometimes ourselves, and we meet somebody at another conference, like the ASAP conference, or sometimes a business unit manager meets somebody in a conference or at the bar or whatever. Those can be sparkling moments of inspiration for potential alliances. But then we bring these people typically back and say, what are the objectives strategically? So we bring them back into our language of what are the strategic objectives, then preparation, and then partner selection. So we redo the partner selection on the basis of more objective and then the subjective criteria, instead of just accepting that this person or representative of a company is by definition the best partner.
And then the partner selection is more a sanity check.
A sanity check, and we have examples, and I'm sorry, I cannot explain which examples, but we have examples where the business unit manager was very enthusiastic, came to us and said, hey, I met person ABC of company XYZ, and I think we should do something with him on this and this. So then we went back with this person, what are the objectives, and then came to the conclusion while doing them with the management team typically of that business unit, the partner selection, that we came up with a much better partner, and that this company which he met, in this case was a he, ended as number three in the row of six, which was interesting. And this business unit manager also recognized that, after that session, yes, you're right. We are right, looking at his management team, because he just did not know enough about the other potential companies and only looked at one or two elements of the fit instead of three, four, five elements of the fit.
So the partner selection, the fit, is a balanced objective observation of how the partner fits with Philips.
It's very important just to have at least that fit in place, both strategically, ideally also culturally and operationally, because working together is not so easy. And if the way of working, the culture is so different that you cannot overcome those differences in way of working, then the alliance is probably not successful.
Now, your current role is also in innovation. And I can imagine that also in innovation, you work together with partners.
Definitely.
Do you have the same process for selecting a partner in innovation, or a similar process, or do you do it completely different there?
It's a very interesting analogy you try to make, because what I saw when I came into innovation, I saw it as a complete different world. Innovation people are different people than alliances or strategy people. But the good part is that I was able to play now the role on innovation, be strategic, responsible for innovation, and also what we call open innovation, which is typically working with others. Working with companies, with universities, with startups in different forms and shapes. I see a lot of parallels, things in parallel compared to alliances, but I also see many differences, because if you work with others, like universities, it's different. Different than working with companies, and typically because the partner is different, the university is different, but also because you typically don't work with the university as such. You sometimes work with a professor or a group of people around one professor. And that's even more people business, I would say, and the incentives for professors are usually different than the incentives for companies.
Yeah.
Because professors are eager typically to publish, to publish new results. Well, companies like ours want to have new innovations and new ideas, and not that they are immediately spread in publications on that moment, maybe later, but not too early. So you see also the incentives, the objectives are typically different, which sometimes makes it more challenging. And then you typically also work then with the university to make a contract where the university also have the view that they want to create a lot of money with the IP being created by the university professor. And the professor usually is less interested in that. So it's also, I would say, you work with one partner then, say one university, but they typically have multiple faces, which is interesting, but sometimes challenging. And what we are learning now in the innovation community is also to make sure that we have to put dedication on that. So for a few selected strategic partners, and in the Philips Research, we are building those as we speak. We also apply similar things as in my alliances world. We apply dedication of an alliance manager. We don't call it an alliance manager in this case, but much more a relationship manager. We also have executive sponsorship. We also define clearly what we want to achieve on both sides together with the partner. And we measure the progress. We do real partner selection. So we don't want to end up with too many strategic partners. So I have much more, I think, been able so far to make clusters of strategic partners, which will be a handful. And then we have, say, partners, especially the universities and startups, where we want to work with the best in the world on one topic only. And then we have, say, personal relationships between researchers or R&D people and people at universities, which is hundreds, maybe thousands of relationships, and we don't look at them. We just leave them for the moment. So we mainly focus with our more professional approach on those strategic ones.
Interesting. So you are indeed bringing back the best practices from the alliances world and trying to apply them where possible in the innovation world.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. It's not only with universities, also with suppliers or startups.
Yeah. Okay. When we look at people who are entering into alliance world and who are new, what would be your number one recommendation for them?
When I talk to people who are new and have an interest in alliances, also people who are new and have no interest in alliances, but it's more difficult to talk with them. But the people who are new and have an interest, I think one learning I would say is if you've seen one alliance, you've seen one alliance. When I typically meet people, they say, oh, I've done alliance. Now I know exactly what to do next time and next time and next time. And I say, that's not my experience. If I've seen one alliance, I've seen just one. And in the meantime, I've set up over 35 alliances in Philips and in the innovation space, even more. So there are every time new learnings coming up and you need to remain focused on this individual situation to make it successful. And of course, our learnings from one place to another. But yeah, I don't pretend that I know exactly how to set up an alliance successfully always. There's so many elements which come in place between people, between organizations, between strategies which are changing, the environment is changing. So it's not something which you, if you've seen one, that you know everything. But it's a great world. It's fantastic because over time, I'm convinced that there is no world without alliances anymore. Life will be different. The world will be much more linked between corporations. You have to be, I think, able to deal with it.
I'm glad we share that conviction.
Yeah.
So is there any book on alliances or on business in general going forward into the future that you would like to recommend to the listener?
Yeah, there are many, many books written about what great companies do, for instance. Good to Great and those kind of books are always nice to read. But typically a few years later, most of these companies which were mentioned to be great are, yeah, either bankrupt or close to bankrupt. So it's very difficult to predict based on what people have observed, what the future will bring. And there are nice books also around alliances, and many of them will, I think, typically give similar kind of views on, hey, you have differences in alliances, and here are some phases which are important. I think it would be good to at least understand what is in those books and read about it.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I would certainly recommend to like take a look at what ASAP has. ASAP has also best practices and real good material built upon all the experiences of the people in ASAP. But there's no book, I would say, which gives you the holy grail on alliances. So if you just read that book, then you know everything. That book is not there. Maybe it should be written, maybe by you, Peter. I don't know, but it's not there. So, but it gives you some guidelines and understanding. And then I think going into practical training, if you're new, say, maybe you go into a couple of training sessions, workshops, get engaged with other people in the same field, learn from each other and start practicing, and also learn from what you do right and what you may not do right. So one book, sorry, I don't have it yet.
Okay. So would the whole, that's almost my last question, would the whole methodology be different for large companies than it is for small companies?
No, I don't think so. The methodology, so the language, how to go into an alliance is probably more or less so simple, yeah, that everybody should be able to work with it. The big difference, I would think, is that small companies might find it easier to learn from each other because they interact more often. It's overseeable. Maybe you are in the same room, building, whatever, closely connected. In a large company like ours, for instance, Philips, 120,000 people, we are all over the world, so it's much more difficult to make sure that people all across the world are, yeah, learn how to do things in the same way. And again, also there, I think large companies, people change after 2-3 years, they have the next career step, so they move out. And it's good that, because then you have a proponent or and someone who knows it in another place in the organization, but you have to catch up with the new people again. So I think on the learning aspects, it's much more challenging for a big company to do so.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are willing to really become successful, then it makes sense for a large company to invest in a few people, whether you call it alliance office or whatever you want to call it, I don't mind so much, but to have, say, a small group of people who can translate experiences into learnings for others, and try to professionalize and improve your success. That's for large companies typically a little bit easier to do than for a small company.
Yeah. I think that's a great recommendation that many companies still can implement. Thank you for that. Where can people find more about you if they would like to be in touch?
Yeah, I'm on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
That's probably the easiest one to find me.
Include a link in the show notes to that.
Okay.
To make it easy.
Yes. I also have an email address, but it's probably easier to go to LinkedIn, find me, and drop me a note if you have certain questions. And I try to be able to answer the question. If not, then I try to forward it to somebody else who can provide the answer.
Okay, great. Anything that you would like to share that I did not ask for and you feel that you would like to share with our listeners?
Probably yes. I think there are still many things to share, because talking about alliances is half an hour we did now. I could talk for days about it, and probably that counts for many people.
Yeah.
It's just a very small snapshot we discussed about. I think it's worthwhile to really spend more time and really go deeper and invest. I would say, as a big company, even as a small company, invest in the learnings, invest in building some capabilities, because each alliance you as a company do better even 1 or 10% better typically gives you millions of additional revenues or profits. So it's an easy investment. So that I think, would be my recommendation to really think about it.
All right. That's a great recommendation. Thank you very much. And thank you for being on the interview.
Thank you, Peter. Very nice to do so.
So far for the great conversation with John Bell. As mentioned before, you can find all information in the show notes, and please leave your comments and questions under the show notes at simoons.com/episode4. Thanks again. Until next time.
Thanks for listening to the Collaborative Business Podcast. For more insights about business collaboration, partnerships, and alliances, hop over to www.cmoons.com.